The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. It's coming home. And in a game no one was trying to win, Adnan Januzaj doesn't follow the script and scores the type of goal that made us want him to be English for 5 minutes about 5 years ago. All that means England finished second in the group, which is what we all wanted until we realised that Colombia are quite good. Oh, damn it. Colombia win Group H after a fortunate win over Senegal, who finished behind Japan on yellow cards after they were beaten by Poland. Also tonight, we'll speak to South American expert Tim Vickery as the knockout games start on Saturday, Uruguay, Portugal and Argentina, France. We'll answer your questions, and could tonight possibly be my humps? You'll have to wait and see on tonight's Guardian World Cup Football Daily. Barry Glendenning, nice to see you.
And nice to see you.
Will Unwin, World Cup debut on the pod. How have you enjoyed the tournament so far?
I feel I've got a good relationship with it. I'm quite happy with it so far.
Okay, that's marvellous. Villa Donex writes, loving the daily pod, but for his own sake, maybe let Max sit one out before or after the next England game. Lately, he's been like a kid who's had too many Skittles.
Well, you have eaten a lot of chocolate, haven't you? And you were showing off a fungal infection your father diagnosed earlier today, presumably from spending too much time in a damp studio and in my company.
Do people get fungal infections from spending too much time with you?
Depends what we're doing.
For the tape, please can we say that Barry in my relationship has never become physical. Like that to be said. I'm going to open this beer and I'm very excited about it. Okay then, lads, it's very important that we make the podcast entertaining. The material you have to work with is England v Belgium. Good luck, Barry. The last time, by the way, the World Cup winners didn't win their qualifying group was 1982. Damn it.
I believe of the last 16 semi-finalists, all won the group. So, Not that that matters or makes any difference. I was totally bored watching the England-Belgium game, but I think you were as well. I mean, each time an England player went in for a tackle before Belgium scored, you were roaring for them to be booked, and you actually celebrated Belgium's goal. It was kind of strange.
It's very strange to watch England in a major tournament and know that the game doesn't matter, but we've already qualified. Obviously, we've seen games like the Costa Rica game last World Cup where it didn't matter, but we were already out and depressed. We're currently not depressed, but the game didn't matter. I didn't really know how to behave.
Yeah, it's interesting when Barry says about the last 16 semi-finalists all winning their group. There is one thing to add, that they were trying to win their group, whereas England were not. They made a good effort to not try and win the group tonight. It was slow. It was, you know, it was pretty mundane. It was barely closing down, and Marcus Rashford putting a very good effort to hit a shot wide, which he normally would have scored, I reckon. And it is interesting to watch an England game. It's quite, you know, when you don't care if they win or lose, it's quite relaxing. It was like a nice friendly, you know, against Costa Rica in Ellen Road. It was a party atmosphere for everyone there, I assume, and also in here pretty much, because that's what we had to do to entertain ourselves.
I think actually, just the whole game experience, like the manager, Gareth Southgate, didn't seem to quite know what to say in his post-match interview. The players, I guess, won't really know what to say in the mix zone. The commentators, Clive Tilsley and Glenn Hoddle in the UK, were trying to make out the game was far more important than it is, because I suppose it's their job to talk it up. And even the pundits in the studio were again trying to bestow upon the game a gravitas it really didn't deserve, because it was fairly insignificant. It didn't matter who won.
I suppose the question is there anything we can do to change this? The group stages have actually been pretty good, I think, and there have been barely any games that have been this tedious. The Denmark-France game springs to mind as I think I said, the worst 90 minutes of sport that ever happened. I mean, this ran it close. Glenn Hoddle in the commentary in the UK said England should be top of the group because they had a bigger margin of victory in the Panama game than Belgium had in either of their two games, which is patently complete nonsense, because Belgium won both their games comfortably. Well, and they beat us, obviously, but had it been a draw. Loro started talking about... What was he talking about, Barry?
He was doing core comms on the Japan-Poland game, and he said that instead of yellow cards, it should go on who scored the most goals in qualifying, which is a bit ridiculous because Japan's qualifiers are probably a lot easier than Poland's.
They play about 20 games more.
Personally, I think it should go to a Eurovision-style vote of the citizens of all the countries involved in the World Cup, with Graham Norton, say, providing a wry acerbic commentary in the Terry Wogan style, or indeed the Graham Norton style. The disciplinary thing seems as good a way as any. Beyond that, a coin toss or something? I don't know. Hmm.
Do we just say, look, sometimes this happens, and it's a bit annoying when it does, but it isn't the end of the world, Will?
Yeah, you just got to accept it, you know. The draw when it was made, you didn't know if England be playing Belgium first, Panama, whatever. And it's just the look of it, really. The fact that the two stronger teams in the group played each other last, you know, either way, they should beat Panama and Tunisia, whichever one it comes in. If they want to play the first game and have a little agreement to draw that or whatever, it won't make a difference. It was, you know, if you don't win those two games, you're knackered.
I kind of feel sorry for the people who were at the game. You know, if you got a ticket for England-Belgium, you're going, ooh, this is a good one. And then, you end up with that.
The goal was a moment of brilliance from Adnan Januzaj, not just the finish, but the shimmy beforehand as well.
Well, yes, it's the kind of silky skills and finesse that had many English journalists clamouring for him to sit tight for 3 years, get English citizenship and play for England. And also the silky skills and finesse that were largely absent from his time at Sunderland. Wahbi Khazri also scored tonight, and you put out a tweet. This has to be the first time that two Sunderland players scored in the World Cup on the same night in history.
No, I said this is.
Oh, this
as
is.
As a fact.
Okay.
And saying, I've made this up, but it must be true.
And needless to say, Jonathan Wilson replied to say that it happened only last week.
Khazri scored on the same night as Zola Toivonen scored for Sweden against Germany. What are you going to do? If you didn't realise Jonathan Wilson knew more than me, you do now. The goal was wonderful. What was also wonderful was Batshuayi afterwards. Will, wasn't it?
It made the game for me, really.
Mm, can you talk us through it?
Essentially, the ball goes in the back of the net, and like any good striker who was following in to take some of the acclaim by catching the ball and in his euphoria smashed it against the post, and then that went back into his face and hit him quite hard, really. It was very enjoyable.
Do you want to hear what Batshuayi has tweeted already? Parental advisory, if you do listen with your children, look away now. He's written, aha, I knew I'd be fucked the minute I came to my mentions. Why am I so stupid, bro? Shit hurts. So, to be fair, to play him. I think he does have a kind of media manager. I've been told this, but still, I think he did that. And fair play to him. His tweets were good.
And the £200 he gets from Beadles about.
I think you've been framed. Yes.
Sorry.
I mean, Beadles about would have involved Batshuayi's car being clamped and Jeremy Beadle coming up with a fake beard over his beard already and pretending to be a traffic warden. That's one for the kids, definitely, isn't it? Martin says, if England needed to have a worse disciplinary record on this yellow cards issue and this idea that we were two bookings cleaner than Belgium, weren't we? And then Belgium got another one and then another one. Had it been a draw, we'd have been top of the group because we had more bookings. Martin says, if England needed to have a worse disciplinary record than their opponents to finish second in their group and secure an easier path to the final, who would the panel have playing in their side, past and present players excepted? We spent most of the second half building this team, didn't we? We've gone for a 3-4-3 formation. All players have to have had at least one England cap. So this is the team we would put out hoping for bookings. Goalkeepers was tricky, but we went with David James, thinking that he might
sprint off his line and make a ricket. Okay, we're playing 3-4-3 with Norman Hunter, Ruddock and Pierce in a three. A midfield four of Wise on the right, Shelvey and Joey Barton, with Paul Scholes on the left, specifically putting Scholes on the left so he's angry about being on the left. And up front, Kevin Davis, Mick Harford and John Fashanu.
See, I think that might backfire because if the ball is lumped long, all three of them would go for it, elbows out, and just basically knock each other out.
Producer Jonathan got some good facts. David Beckham has the most bookings for England, if you're interested. Beckham and Rooney, the only players to be sent off twice. Raheem Sterling, the second player only to be sent off in a friendly. The other, in 1977 against Argentina, was Trevor Cherry. Why are you smiling, Barry?
Because I know what you're going to say next.
Well, producer Jonathan said the only one was in 1977 versus Argentina. Do you know who it was? And I guessed it was Trevor Cherry. And I don't know anything about Trevor Cherry. I don't even know he played for England.
Could you pick Trevor Cherry in his pomp out of a police lineup?
No. I only know his name because it's quite a funny name. Just to describe exactly how bored we were during the game, 25 minutes into the game, we got most engaged by the fact that we discovered that Thomas Vermaelen is married to an English lady called Polly Parsons, who used to be engaged to Ricky from EastEnders.
That's a Will Unwin... it's a producer Jonathan fact.
Mm. You knew he was married to an English lady. You didn't know that lady used to be engaged to Sid Owen.
I very much do a base level of research.
I think
if you read my work.
I don't know who any of the Belgians are married to. So, frankly, it's better than I could have come up with.
Also, Vincent Kompany's married to an English woman as well. So.
Oh, yes. No, yeah. I did know that, yeah. Actually. Interesting.
Marouane Fellaini isn't married to anyone, but once got very angry with a girl he brought back to his house because she dropped a Big Mac in his swimming pool.
Which sounds like a euphemism to me.
Oh, no, it actually happened. Well, bits of lettuce and gherkin floating around his nice clean pool.
Mm, you couldn't eat it, could you? You couldn't pick it out again. It'd be slightly chlorinated. I mean, it might have more flavour, I guess. Not much more on this game, I'm afraid. Ryan says, is Den Donker one of the best names of the World Cup? Yes.
Well, if he doesn't get picked for the next game, which he probably won't, will it be a case of Roberto Martinez deciding to drop the Den Donker?
Right, I'm with you. It wasn't that good, was it?
It was all right.
It was okay. I was obviously getting a bit smug about the fact that England were finishing second. We'll get on to, we'll analyse the game they've got. But you did say, Barry.
Now, I want to put this in context, right? Because I got stitched up by our multimedia department this morning. They put these little audio clips on Twitter, and it was apparently me saying, this is why everyone, in inverted commas, hates you, mm-hmm. hates England. Mm-hmm. I didn't use the word hate. So just before you say what I think you're going to say, the context for this was you crowing about the fact that England were going to come second in the group and how good this was for England.
And then what did you say?
I said, with expletives I won't add here, I really hope you get hammered by Colombia in the next round.
And then you said, I would laugh for a month, is what you said. Panama 1, Tunisia 2. Panama's goal means this is the first World Cup in history in which every team has scored at least twice. Hashtag sharing. That's from Opta Joe. Do you have anything to say about this game, Barry?
Very little, because I wasn't paying a great deal of attention to it, to be honest.
Will, do you save us?
Tunisia's first goal was a nice little move. Nice for Panama to lead a World Cup game, because more than likely none of those players will ever play in a World Cup ever again because they're terrible. I am going to go meet their goalkeeper for a coffee in Bucharest in August.
Tell this story. It's a nice story.
It's not a nice story,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, it is.
I interviewed the goalkeeper of Panama because my significant other is Romanian and he plays in Romania, so I have a nice template to send to Romanian press officers saying, can I interview your footballer? At which I got a text 2 days later going, I hear you want to speak to me. I am the Panama goalkeeper. I do not speak English. And so I interviewed him in Spanish, and he really wants to copy the paper. So when I go over to see the in-laws. We're going to meet up for a coffee, maybe a beer, because coffees are rubbish. In August.
Will you be charging him £1.80 for the hard copy of The Guardian?
You can get a free copy if you come to the office, Barry. It's fine.
Okay. And just so you know, Barry, it went up to £2.
What did
you do? I think about a year ago, yes.
Actually, I think it was a Saturday edition. So that's.
Oh, the Saturday edition is £2.80.
Yeah.
That's £2.90.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
I think so.
I think I might take.
I should know this.
Hang on. We've worked on TalkSport for 4 years and you still don't know the phone number for people to ring in. So I'm not surprised. You don't
0878.
Know
this. 0878 22 33 44.
No. PM Graham, although it'd be nice if people listening to this pod just ring up Jason Cundy and say, I think you should be more enlightened about women's football or something. PM Graham says, if Panama lose tonight, which they did, they'll be the only team to do so, having been bottom of their group after two games. Saudi, Peru, Korea, Poland all won the third game. Morocco, Costa Rica drew. Something to be said for playing for pride. And we've seen that with the way Panama celebrated that goal and these bottom sides, that it still matters to score at a World Cup, to win a World Cup game. It matters to the players. It matters to the manager. It matters to the fans as well, Baz.
It didn't matter to Poland.
They were
an absolute disgrace for an hour.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to start with them in part two. So why don't we do that?
Okay.
All right. Back in a tick. Welcome to part two of the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. There's a live show, Barry, on the 12th of July, just 3 days ahead of the England-Uruguay World Cup final. It'll be you, me, Philippe Auclair and Ellis James. Now, if England make the final, I know you have a suicide pact with Ellis.
Yeah.
Is that if we win the World Cup?
Yes.
Okay, so you will still be there for the live show.
Yes.
It won't be a version of Weekend at Bernie's where I have to control you on a golf buggy and Philippe has to control Ellis. I don't know if they've even ever met. So that would be an awkward way for them to start.
I think if England do qualify for the final, it might be better to have possibly at least one Anglo-centric flag of St. George waving panellist, but we shall cross that bridge when we don't come to it.
Well, if Tommy Robinson's been freed.
Were you on that march as well?
I loved every minute of it.
Max was nude on a Boris bike.
Anyway, Japan 0, Poland 1. Barry, you did the minute by minute for this. Did you have a nice time? It ended, the most fun part was the end, which seemed to get a lot of people very angry. Brian says, why are the English media so angry with Japan and Poland for not doing anything at the end of the game? I wasn't angry with them. I was just like, well, this is what it is.
Yeah, it was a very peculiar game from start to finish. Japan went into it needing a point, probably, to guarantee qualification. And Poland had nothing to play for except pride. And they didn't even seem particularly interested in playing for that because they didn't try a leg for an hour. And the crowd were getting very antsy because Poland were regularly, on at least two occasions, they got thrown deep, deep in Japan territory, you know, down by the corner flag, and took the throw, and it was 5 seconds. The ball was back with Lukas Fabianski in goal, in the Polish goal. You know, and the crowd were very unhappy with this. Japan were making no particular effort to win the game either. They made six changes for a game they needed, almost certainly were going to need something from. Left out quite a few good players. Left out, I think, three players who'd scored for them previously.
Yeah, Inui was on the bench, and he's been really good for them so far.
And Poland had a good chance in the first half. Grzycki header, which was well saved by Kawashima, the Japan goalkeeper. Many people thought he'd be dropped because he made a bad mistake against Senegal. He'd be very unconvincing in their first two games.
I'm not sure you've given that save as much praise as you should have done.
Save the tournament.
It was a brilliant save, yeah.
You said good save. I mean, I think that That was Schmeichel versus Sheffield United-esque.
Excellent save.
Okay, that's better.
Just kept it the right side of the line.
Are you thinking Seaman versus...
I am, yes.
And I would argue that wasn't a great save. It was a bad header.
Okay.
From Paul Pescasolido, if I remember correctly.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, let the debate commence.
That's why when I tweeted the Japan keeper turned into Schmeichel, it didn't get a lot of response.
But anyway, yeah, so Poland could have scored from that. But apart from that, it just nothing happened for an hour. Then Poland scored. And with 10 minutes to go, Japan stopped playing, just down tools, as did Poland. Because Poland's players were like, well, we're winning. And they're not trying, so we... And they, Japan were just keeping the ball in their own half, passing around. Producer Jonathan showed us the heat map slash passing map, and it's just a blanket of blue across the middle of the pitch, either side of the halfway line. And it was a calculated gamble by Japan, who were counting on Senegal not to score against...
Colombia.
Oh, you shouldn't have told him.
We've all got to get home tonight. Yeah.
It was a calculated gamble by Japan, who were counting on Senegal not scoring against Colombia and getting through courtesy of the fair play. And it's quite ironic that they went through on fair play by employing really cynical, quite unfair tactics for the last 10 minutes. Afterwards, their manager said he was kind of ashamed of instructing his players to just tap the ball amongst themselves. At one stage, the referee was even gesticulating at them to do something with the ball.
He was bored, wasn't he?
I think he tried to tackle them at one point.
And, the Japan manager said it was on him. He made the players do that. And the reason he did it was because he couldn't think of anything else to do. Nothing else, you have to applaud his honesty.
That's his plan B. Japan made 118 passes in the last 7 minutes. That's great. I mean, that'll put them to the top of the, you know, the charts will look a
bit
different.
But for anyone who didn't see it, there was one stage they were over near the technical area, three Japan players just literally tip-tapping the ball amongst themselves. No Polish players making any attempt to get... And then one of them started doing a stepovers.
They were kind of Phil Neville pace stepovers,
yeah, it
weren't
was,
they?
You know, it's not ideal, but it's interesting. It was funny. And you have to feel sorry for Senegal. But Ali Cisse has said, them's the rules, and we weren't quite good enough.
Did you mention Lewandowski's chance?
Oh, no, sorry.
Because he had a big chance, which would have changed... the game.
He had a massive chance. A cross in bounced right in front of him on the edge of the 6-yard box. You would have expected him to bury it, and he skied it over the bar.
Will, do you feel for Senegal? Because part of me feels this was a very tight group, and I think they may have been the most exciting team in this group. And yeah. I thought for that Colombia game, not only did they, for the first 60, even 70 minutes, they were... quicker, they pressed better, they were fitter, they were technically better, they were better organised, they were everything, they were just better than Colombia, basically.
Yeah, they were the only team in their group to try and win a game today. Unfortunately, they lost. They were very good, they were great pressing, as you say, second balls, they were winning them all. Just in the final third, they just struggled, and Ndiaye, you know, couldn't hit a barnyard door with a banjo. Mane almost had a penalty if it wasn't for an absolutely stunning tackle from Davinson Sanchez, which had to go to VAR and was rightly proved to be one of the best tackles of the tournament.
It was, and the ref, Milorad Mazic, because you wonder about pride of referees and are they going to stick to their decision or change it? I thought he was absolutely right to change that, but I thought he had one of the best games I've seen from a referee in the tournament, and I know FIFA sort of watch it carefully as to who they're going to give bigger games, but he really impressed me.
Yeah, he controlled it well. That the penalty decision, it looked like a foul. You know, I was here in the office watching it, and everyone was like, that's a definite penalty. That's, you know, there's a booking. And you look back at it, and everyone was shocked to see that he'd got in there just before Mane, and it was a stunning challenge. And even Mane, I think, was surprised by how good the tackle was on him, because, you know, there was contact, but that was after the ball had gone. It was, yeah, something to admire. And, you know, the thing that lost it for them in the end was that, you know, Yerry Mina, it looks like he's about 2 foot taller than everyone else, and they couldn't cope with him from a corner. The only thing that let Senegal down at times was their goalkeeper, who just looked like an accident waiting to happen throughout the whole
game.
Well,
I'm always wary of a goalkeeper in short sleeve shirts. Don't you think? I think a keeper needs a long sleeve. I can't think of a...
Jussi Jaskalainen? He was a good keeper.
Was he short sleeve?
No, he rolled him up.
I think he has a long sleeve. Barthez was a short sleeve, yeah. And he was dodgy. I can't think.
So you're saying Jäskeläinen rolled his up?
He had a full sleeve and rolled it up. Yeah. I can't think of
a keeper. Obviously, look, Barthez is a good keeper, but I can't think of a keeper that you would, you know, bet your house on, who is in short sleeves. Same goes for tracksuit trousers.
Would you rather your goalkeeper, if you had to choose, wore short sleeves or tracksuit bottoms?
You can't trust tracksuit bottoms at all. Yeah, Kirali and Kareen. Yeah. I would go tracksuit trousers over short sleeves, I believe.
I'd definitely be the other way around.
It's a very difficult thing. Just back to that, the Japanese passes. Maya Yoshida has just gone into the top 10 of passes completed in the World Cup so far. 3 more than Iniesta. Good luck staying there.
Iniesta's going to have a bad time in Japan. He can't compete with that.
Phil asked the question, why are the African teams so rubbish? Sure, there's been the odd good performance, but a lot of very bad ones. Shocking to have no teams in the last 16. They used to have teams that could compete. The World Cup is poorer for an African decline. I mean, I'm slightly wary of lumping all teams from one continent into the same boat, because these teams are you know, in very different parts of a very huge landmass. You know, comparing them, lumping them all together seems a bit trite, but
well, Jonathan Wilson before the tournament did predict on quite regular basis that the African teams would not do well, and he has pointed out that they have, rather than improve from, say, back in the days when Ghana nearly got to the semi-final, and when Senegal were good, Cameroon were good, they have in fact regressed. And I think Paul Doyle isn't quite as down on them, but is of a similarish view. I mean, I don't pay enough attention to African football to be able to offer an explanation, but the two lads know their onions, and I take what they have to say at face value. I thought Senegal were good. In much the same way as I thought Peru were probably the best team in their group, I think Senegal were the best in theirs. They just needed a bit more luck.
I suppose there's an argument to say quite a lot of the African teams have been unlucky. Egypt have been unlucky because Mo Salah wasn't fully fit. Morocco, I think, were unlucky
very unlucky.
Played really well, didn't they? Nigeria could have got through quite easily.
Well, some people will get cross with me again for saying this because it's a bit of a cliche, but maybe it's a cliche. Is there some little bit of naivety there? Because, you know, that we're talking about three different teams who were all impressive, but none of them made it out of the group. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. Were they all unlucky? Maybe. Are they maybe a little bit... Is there some sort of naivety there? Possibly. I don't know.
So then, England v Colombia, Belgium versus Japan. Oh, I wish we were playing Japan.
They're really good at passing, Max. It's a
very good point. I mean, you would say that given what we've seen in this tournament so far, England and Belgium should both progress. Having said that, England and Belgium have only played against Tunisia and Panama and then each other's B teams. So it's actually...
Well, England have lost their momentum now. They're doomed. They have no momentum. It's all about momentum.
Will, what do you think?
In terms of momentum?
No. Ignore Barry for a second. Just in terms of how you, what you think about that Colombia game. James Rodriguez went off injured. That's a big blow for them. I'm not sure defensively they're that strong. Sanchez defended very well. I've had question marks about his distribution since I saw him play for Ajax against Man United in the Europa League final. But everyone says, "Oh, his distribution is excellent for Spurs." I don't think it is yet.
I'd be very hopeful of beating Colombia. They've not looked any great shape to turn it on at times against Poland. There was some lovely football they played in that with Cuadrado and Falcao. Without Rodriguez, that's a key man for them who they've lost. On top of that, though, they do have Mina, who seems like the most dangerous man in the box of the World Cup. And with some of the set pieces that have been coming in from Quintero, I'd be quite confident of them putting pressure on the England defence, even with three big centre-backs like we've played. But overall, the way England have looked confident and more accessible, I think that they've got a great chance of beating them.
One question on England was, if anyone today put themselves in with a chance of starting in that game. And I actually think Loftus-Cheek played very well when he came on against Tunisia, but wasn't necessarily that impressive either tonight or against Panama. And I would bring Dele Alli back in a heartbeat. I don't know if you two are in agreement with me on that.
Well, with Loftus-Cheek tonight, I think he very much came under the unfortunate situation of playing in a team that didn't really care. And Alli might have come back if he was a bit fitter, maybe, to get a few more minutes. Personally, I'd probably stick with Loftus-Cheek. I think he brings a bit more at the moment. He seems a bit more confident on the ball. I know, you know, you say he wasn't great in the last two games, but I think he's merited that position and Alli probably hasn't.
I think at their best, I'd probably go with Alli, but he blows a bit hot and cold. I'd start with Alli, see how he's getting on, and if he's not firing, take him off after 50 minutes or at halftime.
I mean, I couldn't disagree with you more. I mean, I categorically would put Alli in that team. Anyway, it's a game of opinions, isn't it, Clive? Right then.
But your opinion is wrong.
Well, maybe. One of England, Colombia, Sweden and Switzerland will be in the semi-finals of the World Cup. And I think if you'd given Gareth that before the World Cup started, he'd have snapped your arm off, Barry. And that'll do for part two. In part three, we will look ahead to the games on Saturday. Welcome to part three of the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. No podcast tomorrow, a day off. So we'll look ahead to Saturday's games, Uruguay, Portugal, France, Argentina. Let's talk to the South American football expert, Tim Vickery. Tim, good evening.
Yeah, very well. Let's snatch a brief reminder of normal life on Friday before we return to the fray on the Saturday.
Absolutely right. What are you doing with your day off, Tim?
Working on the World Cup. It never stops. Although I did turn down a three-hour TV show on Brazilian TV that wouldn't pay me anything. So I put the limit at that one. I'm not doing it. I want to go and have a coffee. I want to sit and read a book, and that has nothing to do with the World Cup, please.
It wasn't Brazilian Love Island, was it, that you turned down?
No, I don't know what this is, really. And all of my cultural references, I don't know. On this song that the English fans keep singing during the World Cup, it's great, but I don't know what it is.
Okay, let's look at... let's look Uruguay-Portugal first. Everyone's calling it, you know, the Battle of Sochi. It'll be a bloodbath, Tim. Is that what you're expecting?
No, not a bloodbath. Uruguay were very unhappy at picking up their first yellow card at a competition in the third game. So let's put that little stereotype to bed a little bit. But it may not be one for aficionados of high-scoring games and free-flowing football. It's very much two kind of mirror images of, you know... Portugal are the European Uruguay, and Uruguay are the South American Portugal. I expect it to be very tight. Uruguay, I think, have got better with the competition. They weren't entirely happy with their play on the ball in the first two games. They've made a little tweak to their system, bringing in a left-footed left-back, and I think it's made a lot of difference. They've now got three in the centre of midfield, meaning they can match up their opponents and the play can flow a little bit more. And they've got the two up front. And, you know, Luis Suarez and Edison Cavani, they set the tone for the side, really, because they work so hard for the team and they work so hard for each other. That makes them a formidable unit. And Uruguay will hope that the match will add up in such a way that Suarez plus Cavani equals more than Cristiano Ronaldo.
Tim, I read somewhere before the tournament started, it may well have been one of your own little mini masterpieces, that Uruguay weren't expected to be as sort of a counter-attacking team. They were expected to be more expressive in attacking because of these young midfielders they have, but they haven't quite fired yet, have they?
Well, I think they fired very well in the third game against Russia. I think that's one of the most authoritative performances of the tournament so far. What I think you're moaning about is the first two games, which were Egypt and Saudi Arabia, where they were expected to take the initiative and they found it difficult. And one of the reasons that they found it difficult, it reminded me very much of England in the old days of 4-4-2, because when Uruguay have used 4-4-2 as a base formation for some time, and when you want to defend and counterattack, great. You know, you get your two banks of four behind the line of the ball and you go on the mistake of the opponent. But when you want to play a little bit, it can be too rigid. And Uruguay were too rigid with it. They only had two in the middle of midfield Vecino and Bentancur, and they were being outnumbered. It reminded me so much of England with Lampard and Gerrard in the middle of a 4-4-2 being outnumbered. And you're thinking, where on earth is the football? We know these people are capable of better. And since the tweak with the tweak in the Russia game, the ball was flowing much more, and that they were looking better. Although I think they'll enjoy the fact that from now on, they don't necessarily have to take the initiative. They can sit back a little bit and choose their moment. But already, I think it's the most attractive Uruguayan side for some time. It's more attractive, I think, than the one that reached the semi-finals in 2010. So you have to go back a fair way before you find a better Uruguayan side. And no one is going to relish facing them, starting with Portugal. I don't think anyone has defended better than Uruguay in this tournament. And they've defended aggressively. Now, the doubt is Jimenez. To partner Godin. Jimenez missed the last game, missed the Russia game. It looks like he's going to be all right for Portugal. If he is, Cristiano Ronaldo is going to test him and see if he's 100%. And Cristiano Ronaldo has become a master of the art of just spotting the weak point and playing on top of that weak point. If Jimenez doesn't make it, then it'll probably be Coates, the ex-Liverpool player, and then Cristiano Ronaldo will have fun. So that's something that's a key thing to look for in the game, whether Cristiano Ronaldo can find a little hole, whether Jimenez is 100%. But if Uruguay defend as they did in their first three games, and the keeper's hardly had a shot to save yet, so Portugal will find them very hard to break down.
Yeah, lots made, isn't it, of games in this World Cup where players come up against players that they play against in the league. And Ronaldo versus Godin and Jimenez is Real Madrid versus Atletico Madrid. Yeah. I genuinely don't know if that's an advantage or a disadvantage for, and I don't know who it's an advantage and disadvantage for.
No, especially as there are plenty of other players. If we do a quick mathematical calculation, there are 19 other on the field, including Suarez of Barcelona and Cavani of PSG. Can Uruguay bring them into the game? The Portugal centre backs are not, Fonte and Pepe. They're not the quickest. Suarez is wonderful at getting on the last shoulder of the defender. You can see him having some joy there. I mean, it's going to be tight, and it depends on who you take your chances, who takes their chances. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if it were to go to a penalty shootout.
I'd love Suarez versus Pepe. That'll be a fun one. Someone will hit the deck. They'll both hit the deck a lot, won't they? But, I'm looking forward to that. What about Argentina? They play France. Have the Argentinians recovered yet from, minute silence on TV and existential crises across the whole country?
Well, they do love a bit of drama. It's like a kind of tawdry tango coming out from the back streets of Buenos Aires. You remember, I don't know if you were here for the last World Cup, but the song that they drove everyone mad with, it was great, but they just did it to death. The Creedence Clearwater Revival thing that they adjusted the lyrics to. It was all about a goal that they'd scored to beat Brazil in the 1990 World Cup. They weren't singing about 78 when they won, or even 86 when they won. They were singing about 90 when they somehow spawned their way to the final and lost.
Was that Claudio Caniggia?
That's right, yeah. That's what the song was all about. Maradona setting up Caniggia and beating Brazil. Now, they didn't even win that year, but there was something in that kind of that team, that backs to the wall thing that resonates so much with the Argentine soul. My guess would be that they've only won themselves a stay of execution, even though, all right, victories are wonderful things and they change the morale and all the rest of it, and they bring everyone together, and they're no longer, they've now become kind of self-managed. That central incompatibility between the ideas of the coach, Sampaoli, and the playing resources at his disposal has been done away with by the fact that the players are now taking the decisions. I think they decided he had more theory than Darwin and a little bit less of the evolution. So they're just keeping it simple with a back four. But you look at France. Now, I know that a lot of people have been disappointed with France so far, but France never look like conceding, do they? I think the only one they've conceded is a ridiculous penalty that Umtiti gave away. Apart from that, they don't really look like conceding. Argentina always look like conceding. And if you were Messi, is there a defensive midfielder that you'd rather play against less than the fella who's going to be up against him for France? So you can see France there doing a fair bit to nullify Argentina's threat, but you can't really see Argentina nullifying the French threat for the full 90 minutes. So my guess would be that it could be the end for Argentina on Saturday.
You mentioned that Sampaoli is not really managing the team anymore. Is he sort of seen as a joke figure at the moment in Argentina?
He's never been. I remember doing radio stuff before the World Cup, and there were people on your side of the Atlantic saying, "Well, Sampaoli has the right to think that he's the best coach at this World Cup." He's never really been seen that way in Argentina because he's never really done anything in Argentina. You know, his triumphs came with Chile and a good season with Sevilla, and the Argentine public sat down and said, "Well, what have you done for us lately?" And he is a horrible little man. He's a little bald chihuahua that yaps up and down the touchline, driving everyone mad. A little chihuahua that runs on batteries. Wouldn't it be nice if the battery ran out? And Ozzy Ardiles was tweeting in Spanish this week after the Croatia game, saying that he should be sacked. His cycle should come to an end because he's got no class. You know, he spent the end of the Croatia game. He's just yelling and swearing at the Croatia players. He's the kind of fella, and he's done that. He did this recently. He got stopped by a traffic cop and was just taunting him about how little money he earns. You know, horrible little man. With not a lot of class. A fascinating coach with, if you give him the playing resources to play his way, great. You know, his teams are front forward and they're very exciting to watch. But you always wondered when he took over, how on earth is he going to do it with the players that Argentina have, with the lack of renewal that Argentina have? You know, the side that went out to take on Nigeria was one of the oldest sides in World Cup history. No one under the age of 25. And those aching limbs, they could ache a little bit more after coming up against the French, who are quick and strong and skillful with it.
Tim, on the subject of people without much class, what has the reaction been to Diego Maradona's antics in Russia? Is it a case that he can't do any wrong in Argentinians' eyes, or are they a bit embarrassed by some of his behaviour?
Well, there are a lot of people around who weren't around to see him in his pomp in '86. He is a representative of something which is very Argentine. You know, there's a mixture of hubris and self-pity about him, which is it comes straight out of Buenos Aires, and there is a love for him from many, and they love it. They love his flaws. They love how fallible he is, and the fact that he gets up and dusts himself down and gets on with it, and he is utterly spontaneous. You kind of wish the cameras would stay away from him a little bit, you know. I mean, because it all just looks like theatre, doesn't it? And it looks like a theatre of the barely sane. And I think we could probably do with paying a little bit less attention to him. All I hope is that, you know, for all the pleasure that he gave in the first half of his life, he's enjoying himself in the second half. So I hope he gets a kick from all the antics.
Finally, Tim, what do you reckon the first quarter final will be then?
France versus... Oh, you got me. You got me. I'm going to go South America. I've got my little wall chart with a few shirts. I've got the England shirt up. I've had to take the Peru one down because they're no longer with us. But I've got a little row there of Argentina, Brazil and Uruguay still up there. And I'm reluctant to take the Uruguay shirt down. So I'm going to go for France versus Uruguay.
Tim, thanks for your time as always.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tim Vickery, South American expert. That question to the both of you, Barry. Who do you reckon the quarterfinal will be?
Yeah, I'll go with Tim, France, Uruguay.
Will?
Depressingly, I'm going to go with the same.
I reckon Argentina might beat France. I don't know why. I mean, I just think, I mean, I suppose the argument is France at some point have got to start playing some football, given all the players they have, but they really have. I know Argentina haven't either, but I really think.
I wouldn't argue my case with much conviction, but yeah, I haven't been impressed with either of them, really, but I reckon France will do them.
All right. So on to any other business. Did either of you see this thing about VAR and stoppages and the fact that now the ball is in play for way less time and there's not enough injury time added? In some of the games, for example, in the Argentina-Croatia game, there should have been 16 minutes added time at the end and they played 6:13. In the Iran-Spain game, there should have been 15 and they only played 7 minutes. Wondering if they should stop the clock for when VAR happens. Agree, disagree? I mean, you think games should only be an hour long anyway because of our attention span, so I don't know if you'll agree, Barry.
Yeah, it sounds sensible. I mean, that's quite, you know, 10 minutes is a big chunk. A lot can happen. So, yeah. But why are referees not adding on the...
Because I think there's something psychological about adding any more than 5 or 6. Don't you think? If the board came up...
I think 15, anything more than 4. It's like if you go into a tube station, you look up at the thing. When's the next? How long till the next tube? If anything over three is like, oh my God, this is a disaster.
Four is okay.
No.
Five is you might as well cancel all your plans and go back home. Brian, and so as my wife says, if Trent Sainsbury is the middle management name of the tournament, I'd like to nominate Mexico's Jesus Gallardo as the best bad SoundCloud rapper name of the 2018 World Cup. And on that note, I should thank, and let me get his name. It's very important I get his name. Portamento on Twitter, or Matt, he sent it to me on Twitter and on Facebook, has made a rap version of your Pump Up the Jam. So you could become the Ibiza DJ that you've always wanted to become.
Okay. Will Matt want... Does he own me or do I own him? Who's going to make the money here?
Surely you're in it for the art.
You're not the people's rapper, Barry.
Yeah, you're not in it for the money. Frankie Diamond says, enough already with the Barry bedtime stories. A joke is funny the first time you tell it. After that, it just becomes nauseatingly tedious. I would like to check... Producer Jonathan, is Frankie Diamond an alias of yours? Yes, it is. Sorry, Frankie. I understand. It's not everybody loves it. Ollie B says, can we get Barry to read something a bit more suited to his general demeanour and worldview at the end of the pod? Perhaps Do Not Go Gentle into That Good Night by Dylan Thomas, or Daddy by Sylvia Plath. Portlander says, my son recently heard Eye of the Tiger for the first time. It became his favourite song. He asked me to look up the lyrics so he could sing along. It was only then I realised just how much of the lyrics I'd either been mumbling or making up for the last 35 years. Football Weekly's listeners need to hear the fully enunciated lyrics in all their glory. Thanks, Barry. Jake, can Barry read out Shaggy's It Wasn't Me? Tim says, England-Belgium's so dull. Could Barry do Sweat by Inner Circle? Matthew, could Barry deliver Ice Ice Baby in his Irish lilt? Two Victorian God says, can Barry read out the words of Scatman?
No, he couldn't.
Other than Scatman John. The only two lyrics I've got are Scatman's, or Martin says, I like Barry. I'm upset at the objectification of women in these readings. I vote for something that objectifies men. Khalees, milkshake, please. So, Barry... I don't know how long we're going to carry this on. And if you don't enjoy it, we do apologise. You may switch off. Thanks so much for listening. Rate and review if you want to. Don't if you don't. Will Unwin, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
I leave you with Barry Glendenning and Milkshake by Khalees.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right it's better than yours. I can teach you, but I have to charge. I know you want it, that the thing that makes me. What the guys go crazy for, they lose their minds. The way I wind, I think it's time. La la la, la la. Warm it up, la la, la 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 la. The boys are waiting, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. And they're like, it's better than yours, damn right it's better than yours. I can teach you, but I have to charge. I can see you're on it, you want me to teach the techniques that freaks these boys. It can't be bought, just know thieves get caught. Watch if you're smart. La 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 la, la la. Warm it up, la 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 la, la la. The boys are waiting, my milk.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.